Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Robert Bound. This is your daily checklist of the things to see, watch and listen to around the world this week. Today we're going to the cinema with the Telegraph's film critic Tim Robey. He's going to be telling us what to watch out for over the next week, including British Heartwarmer X and Y, World War II Weeper, Sweet Française, and the emotional ups and downs of the new French-Canadian film Mummy. All to come here on the Monocle Arts Review. Stay tuned. Tim, welcome to the programme. It seems like quite a rich week for the film review this week. I'm looking forward especially to talking to Mummy, which is Xavier Dolan. He's a bit of a prodigy, isn't he?
I think he's the man for whom the word wunderkind was invented. He's made like five films in only 25. It's ridiculous.
Is he an enfant terrible?
Yeah, he very much is an enfant terrible. He's both, I think.
Imagine being both.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, we're going to chat first about X and Y, this is a great premise. I think in the wake of The Theory of Everything, it seems kind of, and maybe almost The Imitation Game, we're going even younger with our prodigies.
Yeah. It's true, yeah. And actually this film is in a way a corrective to particularly The Imitation Game and this idea that, you know, brilliant maths geniuses, all we want to do see them do is kind of achieve wonderful things and success in their professional lives. Because this is about an autistic kid who is kind of enrolled in a maths Olympiad, and you're expecting along formulaic lines for him to kind of walk away triumphant, but it's much more complicated than that. I actually really found the film a pleasant surprise. I thought it kind of kept stepping away from the cliches instead of towards them. And as a result, I was really kind of impressed with it.
Well, let's have a clip. Let's have a taster. This is X and Y.
Nathan Ellis, the dragon.
It's not often we have a mind like yours spring up off the radar.
He's mine. I've been Nathan's teacher for 7 years.
Why don't you walk properly?
I've got multiple sclerosis. Why are you weird?
I've got special powers.
Nathan is on the spectrum. Traits of autism. He's a unique young man.
You have successfully earned a place on the United Kingdom Math Squad.
Oh my goodness!
I'm going to go and study. I'd really like to carry on teaching Nathan.
Really?
If that's all right with you.
Jesus Christ!
Bit of a weird one.
Some of our listeners might have recognised the voices there of Sally Hawkins, Rafe Spall, the new generation of old school British actors.
Yeah, and Eddie Marsan.
And Eddie Marsan's
as well.
In it. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And I actually think they're all really excellent. I mean, Rafe Spall has the role that looks on paper like the corniest thing you've ever seen. He's the inspirational teacher with MS who kind of hobbles around the school and smokes weed and kind of provides sage advice. But because being Rafe Spall, who has excellent comic timing, there's something that's a sort of self-mocking quality to the character, which really works, and he's so likable. And Sally Hawkins as the kid's mum is sort of this unappreciated mum who, you know, keeps sitting there and listening to him complain that she's not clever enough to understand him. And I think that's really true to actually raising an autistic kid and the challenges of that. I think that the director here has made documentaries in the past, including a film about autistic maths, you know, prodigies, and he's brought a lot of personal experience into this film. I think the script is actually pretty sophisticated about, you know, dealing with those challenges at that age.
And this is Morgan Matthews. This is an interesting thing, presumably, when a documentary maker becomes a feature filmmaker. What they bring to it. I mean, it was the same with The Theory of Everything, wasn't it? Can you see maybe the level of interest in the technicality, or is it kind of a seamless process going from one to the other with these two directors?
I think this film is quite interested in emotional nuance, and it's sort of playing a familiar arc. You know, there's going to be a kind of redemptive storyline, and you're fairly convinced that the mother-son aspect of the film is going to be the one at the end that kind of comes away with the real emotional clout. But within that, it actually does really sort of subtle things. I liked the portrait of the kids and the way they interrelate. There's some bullying going on. You know, there's this other kid there called Luke, who's brilliantly played by this young actor called Jake Davies. And he's the really, really difficult one who's showing off all the time and keeps kind of like quoting the Monty Python dead parrot scene in this really excruciating way without really seeming to find it funny at all. And all the other kids kind of gradually turn on him because he's sort of unbearable, but it's extremely credible, and none of the others are presented as just kind of cartoon cutout bullies. They kind of have enough of him after a while, and that's extremely believable and kind of makes it much more painful to watch, actually. So I'm giving the film a lot of credit for doing sort of quite good things within a fairly formulaic remit. I think it's pretty good stuff.
And before we go on X and Y, about the disabilities, the autism and the MS, you know, do they feel like they've been dropped in, or are they kind of key parts of it? Could they not be any other way? I think, as far as the story pans out,
I think the autistic thing is really key, but it doesn't do it in black and white. There's a lot of shades of grey. You know, there's the spectrum, and we're kind of figuring out where he sits on the spectrum. He's also trying to conceal his autism for a lot of the film. He wants to fit in, so he's kind of in hiding from it in a way. He doesn't embrace it in that kind of slightly cliched, you know, kind of just be the eccentric outsider Alan Turing kind of way. It's not doing that. The MS I worried would be just a touch too much, but actually it's pretty honest about that as well, particularly about like sexual dysfunction and stuff like that, and it doesn't sort of trump that and kind of give an easy way out at the end. I mean, it's doing a lot of good stuff, this film, and I'm looking forward to Morgan Matthews' next movie.
Nice. That's X and Y. It's a British movie. It's directed by Morgan Matthews. We ran through some of the cast. Next, we wondered in X and Y, Tim, about whether which was the relationship that was going to last the distance. You said it was the mother and son relationship. It takes us to Xavier Dolan's new film, Mommy. We're saying it as an American mommy.
Mommy, yeah. And it's Mother's Day this weekend, right?
So, it is.
Accidental tie-ins here.
Alive, you're good. He's never asleep. You have to get up early to get one over on Tim Robey. So talk us through this one. This seems like a bang crash wallop of a mother-son picture.
It definitely is. I mean, you've got this extremely intense relationship between mother and son. It's sort of semi-incestuous. The father is nowhere to be seen. The kid is very young, seemingly very kind of confused and also oversexed for his age. And then there's this other character who's a neighbor from across the street who kind of steps in, and it becomes a weird kind of menage between the three of them. The two actresses here have both worked with Xavier Dolan before. Anne Dorval was in his very first film, which is called I Killed My Mother. And Suzanne Clément was in another one that he made a couple of years ago called Laurence Anyways. And I think they're both very good. But the real standout is actually the kid, this 15-year-old actor, Antoine, I'm going to get his name wrong.
Antoine Olivier Pilon,
that's the guy. Yeah, who I think is a real kind of force of nature in this film, actually. He just kind of takes over whenever he comes on screen. If you imagine some sort of like even more hyperactive Rupert Grint doing kind of crazy things with his face at all times. But I think that when it's focusing on him, it really excels, this film. There's really interesting style to it as well. I mean, Xavier Dolan is always kind of pushing the boat out with his kind of stylistic approach to things. And here he's chosen a very strange framing. It's shot in 1:1, so it's a completely square frame, which is very unusual. Yeah. Normally you can get 4:3 sometimes, but 1:1 is very rare. And there's this one moment during a kind of montage sequence in the middle where he's on a skateboard and the kid kind of flings his arms wide, and the whole screen flings wide as well. It goes widescreen for this kind of like exuberant sequence, and it's sort of like a real pop video rush that you suddenly get. And then we go back. I think it's not my very favourite of Dolan's films. I actually think his last film, Tom at the Farm, was a bit riskier and edgier, and here it's like he's gone back into more of a kind of Almodovar mode. It's more like his comfort zone, I guess.
There's an operatic quality, I guess. I mean, there's been a lot written about his stuff that they have those things. He also name checks Madonna and says, you know, I don't see the problem. He says, I don't see the problem in everything aspiring to a Madonna video, which for he's a very young man. He's under 30, isn't he? As well,
totally. Correct. And also he's bravely uncool with some of his other influences, or in a way so uncool that he's cool. So there's some of the stuff on the soundtrack here, because the film's set in the 90s. He chooses some deliberately very on the nose 90s songs. White Flag by Dido is there on the side on the soundtrack, and also there's a Counting Crows song which is prominently used. Oasis's Wonderwall is part of that big sequence in the middle, and you're like, these are not cool songs, but in a way we've come out the other side of them, and to use them now as a kind of 90s reference point actually is cool if you kind of grew through that age.
Well, let's have we've talked this up. This is Mummy. It's from Xavier Dolan. Here's a clip.
Parce la vie avec Steve, c'est comme un 25 ans, hein? C'est jamais si tu vas tomber pile. Ou bien donc si tu vas tomber en pleine face. Steve, c'est un violon. C'est mon petit gars, il a bien du charisme, mais quand t'es pas infuse, t'en souviens de là, ça jouera.
Mummy, and that's I presume that is out now. It's one
actually,
of those funny
Mummy
things
is out next week, I think.
Oh,
Mummy is
week?
The one of the three that's out next week. So yeah, that's kind of a preview.
And it is one of those things. I kind of think that this is. I always wonder with these movies and with something that's, as you said, shot in one by one, and then it kind of branches out and it gets widescreen for a couple of shots or for a sequence. Do you feel that Xavier Dolan is one of those directors that is realizes that he's making films that will be seen in a cinema and is wanting to do stuff? He's obviously wanting to do stuff with that. This is not the kind of stuff just to watch.
Yeah,
as a plane.
Totally.
Movie.
And also, he premiered this film in Cannes last year, and it was his first film to make it into the competition at Cannes. It was his fifth film, and he's such an ambitious young director. And I think he'd been quite disgruntled that some of his previous films hadn't made it in. This one did. So he definitely wanted to do something special and kind of show off. He ended up winning, I think, the kind of joint third prize with Jean-Luc Godard, which is not a bad person to share.
No, it's all right.
You could
stand on the third place podium with him.
You could. I did feel as though once the film went wide in the middle there, I wish it had stayed wide, actually. I think it should have kind of ring the changes at that point and evolve into a slightly different story. And then kind of cramping it back down, I feel as though it starts to repeat itself a bit and go on a little bit too long. It's the only kind of criticism I have of it. I think it outstays its welcome slightly.
Okay, well, we're going to stay in France for Suite Française. This is a Second World War film. It's a sort of, well, I don't know whether we're on familiar territory. I mean, certainly it's funny seeing, or I suppose it is one of those things we've seen Kristin Scott Thomas acting in the language that she, I think, acts in more than any other, especially in English, in her World War II, in her 1940s garb in this one. Talk us through this, Tim.
So this is based on a sequence of books by Irène Némirovsky, who in 1942 was deported to Auschwitz as a Jew. And she only got to finish two of the books in her planned sequence of five. Her daughters then published these. They reconstructed the books and published them in 2004, and they became a big bestseller. And now the film adaptation has come out. It's actually English language. Harvey Weinstein pre-bought the rights to it and has sort of packaged it as one of those kind of prestige war dramas. I feel as though somewhere along the line it's lost a bit of edge that it might have had. It's played pretty safe as kind of wartime romance in a provincial occupied French village, in which Michelle Williams and Matthias Skernatz, who plays the world's most cultured and kind of sympathetic Nazi, make kind of goo-goo eyes at each other and are kind of kept away from actually sealing the deal, as it were, for a good hour of the film, while Kristen Scott Thomas, who plays her mother-in-law, kind of looks on scowling and kind of wanting him out of there. In fact, one of the funnier things in the film is the idea that I think it's actually much scarier to have Kristen Scott Thomas as your mother-in-law than to like have a Nazi billeted in your mansion in the middle of the war, because she is fierce. But I actually wanted more of her in the second half of the movie.
Right. Well, I really hope that makes it onto the poster. While we mull over that fantastic quote, let's have a little excerpt of Suite Française.
Have you got anyone?
An officer.
Good evening.
We don't look at him. We don't speak to him.
The piano is yours, I imagine.
I see everything that goes on in this house.
The journal in my home is after Madeleine. The officer that lives it.
I don't speak to him.
That's not what I've heard.
And that was a little bit of Suite Française, and it does seem, just from the trailer there, Tim, it's the sort of film where the forbidden love in it, there'll be someone, the German officer will be, suddenly his hands will be joining hers on the piano.
That's very
it's
much...
that sort of thing, and skipping into a polonaise after she's played something quite funereal or something.
Very much the kind of way they communicate, and there's not much talking between them, but there's him playing the piano, and then there's her voiceover years later kind of saying, he was my enemy, and yet I was drawn to him, and he filled the silence in the house, and all this sort of stuff. I feel as though the voiceover was probably added pretty late in the day to fix some of the sort of shortcomings in the film. Thinking about it, there's one aspect of it that I did find interesting. There's all these poison pen letters that pile up on the officer's desk because everyone in the village at the time, they're kind of trying to kind of backstab each other and kind of spill all the gossip. And this is actually very much what was going on in provincial France at the time. It was a horrible climate of kind of witch hunts and suspicion. But I think it's much better caught in a film that was made in 1943, a film called Le Corbeau, made by Henri-Georges Clouzot, which is exactly about an occupied village and it's about a poison pen campaign against this doctor. And for that film to have been made then was such a risk, and it really kind of endangered his career at the time. And now the film kind of brings the letters in as a device, but it doesn't really kind of deal with the implications of that. It doesn't dare go dark, really. And it's playing it very timid, given that it's 60 years on. Yeah. You feel as though we could probably actually push the boat out a bit now and look at the really disturbing elements of kind of like France turning in on itself.
A little bit of Michael Haneke's White Ribbon or something,
exactly,
where a small
yeah.
town turns in on itself. And
it needs more of that edge, and instead it's played out with that kind of slightly Harvey Weinstein approved.
I was going to say, what can you see the makings of the producer on it?
Totally. I mean, the thing that it ended up reminding me of, it should have been Le Corbeau, but actually ended up reminding me of Chocolat, which is, you know, Weinstein's 2000 yeah. movie about a lovely village with kind of a little bit of intrigue going on and love and kind of forbidden sort of nonsense. But actually, it all kind of works out quite tidily. And I think this film is too tidy.
Eat, Pray, War.
Exactly.
Tim Robey, The Telegraph's Tim Robey, thank you very much for talking us through Suite Française, Mummy, and X and Y. If you had to take one, well, not home, you've seen them all, but if you were to go back to the cinema and see one of them, which would you go and sit in front of for another 2 hours?
The one that was like the most unexpectedly delightful was X plus Y. I really thought it was a charmer.
That is the one, ladies and gentlemen. Tim, thank you very much indeed. You've been tuned in to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Robert Bound. The show is produced by Holly Fisher and researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco. We'll be back next week with our top tips from the world of art, music, TV, books and film. But for the time being, have a great weekend. I've been Robert Bound. Thanks for tuning in.